Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program has been brought to you by Underground Meats, an American producer of handcrafted salami and cured meats in Madison, Wisconsin. For more information, visit shop.undergroundfoodcollective.org or stop by their butcher shop in Madison, Wisconsin. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. It's a beautiful, gorgeous day in Brooklyn here. We're just at the height of the not too hot weather right now. And I'm actually feeling a little sad today because I've never actually been to Seattle myself. And, you know, I've actually feel like now I have been there, and I feel like I've been on a tour of the whole Pacific Northwest region because I'm holding a book right now, and it's called Lark, Cooking Against the Grain. And the author is the chef and owner of the restaurant of the same name, John Sundstrom. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Congratulations on this amazing cookbook.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm really pleased that you're enjoying it and that it's getting out there into the world.
Yeah, so, and that's a fascinating story in itself. This cookbook, it is a restaurant cookbook, but, I mean, first of all, it's one of the most just richly satisfying cookbooks I've seen in a long time, just in terms of image and words. I really savored all the little bits of narrative throughout, and the photos and the recipes are just delectable. It looks like a seriously professional production. However, this was kind of self-published, or it
yep.
was,
yep.
yeah, it was published, and it started with a Kickstarter campaign, correct?
Yeah, exactly. I've had a restaurant called Lark for, I guess we're in our 10th year of business, so about 9.5 years now, and I've been a chef for 20 years and just love food, and, you know, it's my life. And, you know, had kind of, I guess 3 or 4 years ago, right before the recession hit, you know, kind of had my window of opportunity, you know, with book publishers
mm-hmm.
open. You know, I had just won the James Beard Award for Best Chef Northwest.
Oh,
and, you know, lots of positive
yeah.
things, and had some good discussions with publishing houses, and was thinking, oh, yeah, maybe I should do a book. You know, it seems to be the thing to do. And, of course, then the economy changed drastically, and, you know, the publishing business is very fast-moving and mm-hmm. As well as adapting, but you know, so a few years later, we kind of picked it back up again, and a good friend of mine, Jared Stoneberg, he's a former chef and now kind of turned web developer. We had kept in touch, and he had done our websites. You know, he approached me and he was like, "Hey, you know, I think we should dive back into the cookbook idea, but let's find a new media way to do this." So that's
yeah.
kind of where it all started.
Yeah, because you have an app, a complimentary app for the cookbook that has every single recipe from this book on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a great idea. So so that was always integral to the beginning of this cookbook idea.
As we started having a few conversations, you know, I was like, well, you know, hey, I think, you know, I've had some good conversations with publishers, but I don't really know how to pick that back up with them. And he's like, well, let's crowdsource this. You know, I had never heard of Kickstarter before I spoke with Jared, and this is probably a year and a half ago or so. But it was just kind of starting to get going, and he's like, you know, you've already got great fans at the restaurant, you've already got a newsletter, you've already kind of delving into social media. It's like, you have a great platform here to kickstart something, so why don't we raise the money to fund the production through Kickstarter? And one of the things that I really liked about that whole idea was that we could involve our customers and our fans in the whole process of making a cookbook. One of the parts of kind of the traditional model is that, you know, the chef gets up early for a year, you know, and squeezes in some writing time, or maybe has a ghostwriter help him out. But you never really know what's going on until the book lands in the market, you know.
Yeah.
Press releases come out, and suddenly, you know, so-and-so's book is all over the place, but you don't really know what happened beforehand. So I just thought, you know, our guests really... they're really interested in kind of like the behind the scenes, you know, what's going on when in the creative process with food. And I thought, why not kind of bridge the gap into the writing of the book and just making this book?
With
and
so the restaurant, that is.
With too. The restaurant, yeah.
Huh.
And so, but it was really great with the Kickstarter because there's a reward system with Kickstarter, so we made some of our rewards were sort of, you know, access points to behind the scenes.
Wow.
You know, so if you donated a certain amount to the project, we started sending you, we call them rough cuts. So, you know,
wow.
Once we started production, we sent out a recipe every week with some photos. Maybe we did some behind the scenes from our photo shoots or our video shoots. And it just really was a great way to connect with everyone who supported us on the project. And it just gave it a very vibrant, you know, it was a really vibrant and exciting kind of life cycle, just the Kickstarter itself. So
wow.
That was all really, really excellent.
Cool. And it looks like people had fun, too. I'm looking at the back few pages of the book, and it looks like people are hanging out doing, you know, a picnic and... You're
yep.
doing a photo shoot here in the wilderness and
yeah.
maybe
yeah,
a recipe well, test dinner or something is going
exactly.
on here.
Exactly. Well, once yeah. we decided that we were going to self-publish this, you know, we kind of, you know, in those early stages, we're like, well, we could pitch this idea and see if anybody wants to pick it up. And we've got, there's a local publisher, Sasquatch Books, that does some really nice projects. Mm. They've sort of grown in the last few years. They sort of used to be travel guides and things, but they now have done some really nice cookbooks and lots of things. But we decided that what the ultimate goal was really to just stay true to kind of our vision artistically of the book. And, you know, Lark is a really, it's a very locally focused restaurant. We've always believed in supporting local farms and artisanal producers, and we thought, we'd like to really employ local people, you know, local photographers,
designers,
you know, what have you. And
amazing.
So it kind of became clear that we should go ahead and do this on our own and self-publish it. And there's also some financialist interest in that. You know, the structure of book business, you know, it's a business, right? So, you know, a bigger house has lots of people to pay and lots of, you know, infrastructure to support for every book that's sold. And, you know, so we decided we'd do it ourselves, and we're happy to do a smaller run of books, but really keep the focus on quality and integrity throughout the project. So,
cool.
We actually even printed the book in Seattle, which is very unusual. You know, I mean, almost all cookbooks are printed overseas nowadays. So really just very unique way to kind of keep our hands in the process and just really support our local economy. So,
wow. So, and, you know, you're a James Beard award-winning chef, and, you know, you had conversations with publicists, so it's not like you couldn't have, you know, tried to work out the traditional route. But
Yeah. I mean, you know, we had, you know, again, I had a couple of good conversations, you know, back in, I guess, 2007, 2008. But one of the things that just struck me in those conversations, you know, again, there's a lot that a publisher could bring to you. You know, they've certainly have got quality and professionalism all as part of the package. You know, they know what they're doing. They can take a lot of the load out of your hands as a chef. You know, during the production of the book, you know, it was sort of an extra job for me. I mean, I spent 3 or 4 hours a day before I even went into the restaurant working on the book. But what the trade-off for that is, you know, for every, you know, say $40 book that gets sold, you might get a couple of dollars back. And also there might have been compromises in terms of, you know, just what we wanted to show.
Artistic decisions.
You know, we've got some pictures in the book. You know, there's whole raw pig heads in the book and, you know, little squabs with without their feathers. And, you know, there's just there's things in there that, you know, if I were dealing with a bigger publisher, they might have been, well, hey, you know, let's keep this a little more accessible. Let's do a pork chop instead of a pig head, or, you know, we didn't have to make those kind of compromises or choices, because we were able to say, well, hey, we really want to represent the restaurant and my style of cooking, and you know, we decided fairly early on that this was certainly a book geared toward you know, someone who cooks fairly often, who's already a farmer's market shopper. Yeah. You know, we weren't trying to do a 101 style of, you know, how to cook when you graduate from college kind approach, you know?
So, totally. It's a little more just a little rustic, a little organic, just kind of natural style of cooking with inspiration.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the recipes, you know, I would say most of the recipes are pretty accessible, and you know, there's lots of great vegetable recipes in there, and grains, and things that are really pretty quick and easy to make. But there are a few, there's a few stumpers in there. You know, there's some things that I've even said in the introduction, you know, this is one to spend the whole weekend on, you know. Have a dinner party, devote the time to it, but for the most part, it's really just got, the hope was to help people become more confident cooks, you know, and it's, if they've already got some skills.
So would you say that, you know, with the self-published route and the smaller print run, would this be a sort of small batch artisanal cookbook?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, for the print book itself, you know, again, we decided that our initial run, and we're kind of calling this with the maroon cover, the maroon binding, is the first edition. We have a couple thousand books, and we're hoping to do another couple thousand when that sells out, and we'll probably change it a little bit. We'll switch to maybe a different color binding, and just because we want that first edition to always be special. And again, knowing that I'm not going to
feel really that makes me feel really special that I have this like small kind of rare cookbook too.
Yeah, well, I hope that's the feeling. I mean, you know, really everyone who seems to be able to spend a little time with it they do seem to recognize that it's different from what is out there, and that they really, I don't know, it seems to resonate, and I'm really proud of that and grateful, you know. So thank you.
Oh my gosh. So tell me about Community Supported Cookbooks, because that's the name of the publisher as as imprinted here on the side of the book.
Yeah. Well, so that's basically the company that Jared and I founded. We needed to have a structure. Sorry, I've got a plane flying overhead. I'm in my backyard because we're having a beautiful day in Seattle too. So
good.
Here, I'll move in just so it's not too loud.
Atmosphere.
There we go.
Yeah.
That's a little better. But so that's the company we founded, and because we had to have a way for the Kickstarter, you know, money and things to just flow through for us to help, you know, pay people. So basically, the money we raised through Kickstarter went to pay all of the people who worked on the project. So we basically built our own team. We hired a great local photographer, videographer for the work done on the apps and the ebook versions, a book artist and graphic designer. And then we also had, you know, quite a bit of time put into the IT side, you know, so there was an app builder and programmers, and, you know, we put together a team of about 12 people, all with, you know, great talents and actually a lot of artistic background.
And who you knew and you wanted to work with. Right?
Exactly. Yeah, and you know, we really lucked out. Everyone is really great, and the photos you see in the back, sort of the behind the scenes. You know, we quickly gelled and just had a lot of fun doing this project. You know, one of our first road trips, we decided we wanted to be able to kind of say, you know, here's life in the Northwest through my eyes. So we did this trip out to the Washington coast. Early last spring, and to do the razor clamming trip. So we wanted to have a, you know, some a lot of photos of the Wild Coast and kind of the wet. And we just had this amazing trip together. You know, there were probably 20 of us in the house. Some of us brought our families. And, you know, we dug razor clams and cooked together and you know, took photos and videos the whole time. And it was just, it was a riot.
So. Oh, my gosh. That is so much fun. So I can't wait to talk more and ask you a little bit more about this cookbook. We're just going to cut to a quick little musical interlude.
Sure.
And we'll be right back.
Okay, thanks.
You're listening to In My Dreams by the California Honeydrops on the heritageradionetwork.org. Keep it locked for more Eat Your Words.
Underground Meats is an American producer of handcrafted salami and cured meats in Madison, Wisconsin. They use small farms from southwest Wisconsin to source their meat. The animals are raised on pasture for their entire lives by farmers who care about animal welfare. While Underground Meats uses European traditions, they also use ingredients from the upper Midwest to try to create new types of salamis, experimenting with both ingredients and techniques. The salamis are made using heritage breeds, mostly red wattles, tamworths, berkshires, and mule foots. Try their award-winning cured pork shoulder and goat salami. To learn more and purchase products, visit shop.undergroundfoodcollective.org or stop by their butcher shop in Madison, Wisconsin.
All right, we're back chatting with John Sundstrom, the chef of Lark, the restaurant, and also the author of Lark, the book, the cookbook, that is. So we still got you on air from your home in Seattle?
Yes, I'm here.
Awesome. So we talked a bit about a lot of the unique advantages of self-publishing this cookbook. But just briefly, I wanted to, I was just curious, what do you think what is, if any, are, you know, some of the disadvantages or challenges?
Sure, sure. Well, there's a couple things. I mean, first of all, there is, I mean, in the book world, my learning curve was huge in terms of just getting a book together.
Yeah, but, like hardcover, binding.
All the choices there are to make. And then, you know, when we started talking to, you know, local bookstores, you know, like, hey, we're working on this. We'd love to set up an event with you next year. But as soon as they hear the word self-published, you can see the shutters close, you know, because I think there is a there can be a lot of poor quality. And that was sort of the biggest, there's a bit of a stigma there and, you know, a little bit of an uphill battle in terms of that. So, you know, the good part was we were willing to give away some books. And so as soon as we were able to actually put the book in their hand and we give them, you know, the other versions of it, which are basically the app
apps,
or
yeah,
the ebook for them to see, they started to realize, you know, the rich quality and the thoughtfulness and all of the positive things that went into it. So,
right.
But certainly there was a, as soon as self-published comes out of your mouth, there's sort of a little bit of a clamming up. So, luckily we've been able to overcome some of that. And I think, you know, a lot of our early reviews and some of the press we've had have really, I think, you know, outlined the uniqueness of the whole, you know, kind of doing the electronic versions in tandem with the print version.
Mm-hmm.
And just sort of highlighting that they're both great ways to enjoy the recipes and enjoy the stories. And it's really, you know, the world has changed a bit. So there's more than one way that people may want to use this tool is kind of how I look at it. So,
right.
And then the other disadvantage I would say is the distribution network. You know,
mm-hmm.
one of the big pluses if you're working with, you know, Chronicle Books or 10 Speed is that, you know, they've already done this hundreds of times and they've work with chefs, and they immediately know how to, you know, put you on tour and, you know, get you to the right places and people and get
and
you in front of the right pieces and people. So,
put the books in the stores, too. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So there's this whole distribution side of things. And I think we've done a pretty good job of kind of getting into, you know, the independent stores in the Northwest and on the West Coast, and we've certainly sent books out to what we think are the best places around the country, you know, Kitchen Arts and Letters, and, you know, we're hoping that those kind of places will pick it up once they can actually, you know, experience
yeah.
the book. But at the same time, from the very beginning, we knew that, you know, my expectation wasn't to be in every Barnes & Noble around the country, you know.
Right,
Much
yeah.
rather keep, I don't know, I guess I kind of think of it the way, you know, a big label, record label might approach things versus an independent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, we're able to, you know, keep some of our standards and, you know, keep some control of the project and also have a bit more ownership when it's all said and done. And, you know, we're going to have a smaller group of really loyal fans and followers versus being on, you know, mainstream radio, I guess is how I would think of it. So.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about the same thing in terms of, like, food comparisons, like, say, a really small, you know, farm's cheese versus, you know, it's hard to get around and just, to, you know, with the manpower to get into stores and
right.
you know, it's just not going to work.
Yeah,
all
very
the time.
Very similar approach. But again, that kind of goes back to really the way we run the restaurant anyway. You know, we really try to, we're very loyal to, you know, the farms we've been working with for 10 or 12 years or, you know, the small cheese company, you know, doing the right thing but still not quite off the ground. You know, we're much more likely to, you know, try to support them than to just go with a big
right.
brand.
So. You know, I'm curious to see if things will start to change and people will start to not have that, you know, aghast look on their face when the word self-publishing is
yeah.
mentioned because, you know, this obviously proves that you've not only made it good quality or passing quality, but it's
sure,
actually a passion
sure.
project and, you know, you took so many unique advantages with it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, a couple of the we've had some kind of book industry insiders see it and say, you know, it's a beautiful project, and you know, like we're like we couldn't have done everything you did in this book. You know, like there's just certain when you're talking about printing, you know, 20,000 books versus a couple thousand, there's just things that I guess don't scale up. And so, you know, we've had some nice compliments. Some, of course, the other side of that is, you know. We're going to make less per book. I mean, it costs us more to just to produce the book, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So printing in Seattle probably costs 3 or 4 times what it costs to print in Shanghai or something like that, you know. But the other positive aspect of it, though, is that we did the whole project in a year, which is pretty remarkable. I mean, I think the standard, you know, cookbook from the inception to market is usually more like a 2-year process.
Okay.
So because
all right.
we kept it all here and we were lean and fast and, you know, willing to work really hard, we were able to also get it done quite quickly. So
this is quite a testament to that. You know, did you have it, have you had any folks ask if you were, like, you know, against traditional cookbook publishing or book publishing?
No. And I mean, it hasn't really been phrased that way. And I certainly am not against any of that. I mean, I'm a big fan of cookbooks. And in the grand scheme of books, I guess, all told, I think that cookbooks will probably be, you know, in a lot of ways, one of the strongest printed books
right.
that will still exist.
Right.
I think that cookbooks hold a special place in people's hearts and minds, and, you know, I'd much rather have a shelf full of great cookbooks that I have around for years and years versus, you know, summer novels or,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's a certain type of reading that I'd much rather have on my Nook or my Kindle versus having a cookbook.
An
so,
physical,
you know, I think
yeah.
that cookbooks certainly aren't going to go away, and I love that there are people doing great quality out there, and we certainly looked at some of our favorite publishers and admired their work and tried to do, you know, we wanted to be professional and we wanted to be well-regarded and yeah, sort of buck that trend of, you know, what people would think of as self-published.
Hmm.
You know, we wanted to be of national quality. So,
yeah. Are there any inspirational cookbooks that you kind of drew from or are your favorites?
Let's see. I mean, I've had a list that's been growing for 10 years. You know, when I first started thinking about a book after a couple years into the restaurant, I mean, you know, certainly there's some benchmarks. I mean, like the French Laundry cookbook is still one of my favorites just for its, you know, its cleanness and it's also its thoroughness and
yeah,
its great representation of technique.
Mm-hmm.
I have some more obscure ones. Like I have this book that was published in Europe somewhere called The Joy of Truffles that just has a really great, the photography is very timeless. It's
uh-huh.
very, you know, it's probably a 15-year-old book, but, you know, it just feels very, like I'll still want to pick it up 10 years from now. Like
okay.
it's very, there's some types of photography that can feel dated rather quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I've got books from the 90s that I'm like, oh, I can tell, that's so 90s, you know?
right.
And my hope was that we could find a way to be a little bit more timeless and hopefully be a book that people refer to again and again in their collection. You know, I think a lot of us who are into food, you know, probably have dozens or hundreds of books, but you probably go back to 8 or 10 of them all the time. So,
I
love the Canal House series, you know. Those are really just beautiful
books. Canal House cooks every day. Yeah, we had them on as earlier this year.
Their books are great. And then there were, you know, sort of, we picked apart things from a bunch of different books. There's a book called Shunju that's a Japanese restaurant. And I just loved the way they told the story of the seasons. You know, they had great photos, and they just kind of captured a great marriage of the outside and the inside, and you know what that means in a restaurant. And I think that has a real application in the Northwest. You know, we're so inspired by, you know, our foragers and the seafood and things like that, that I wanted to really bring the outside and the natural into the book. And this Shunju book did a great job of that, you know, 10 years ago. So,
cool.
You know, lots of inspiration. And, you know, certainly some of the newer ones, I mean, Noma and Favakin are beautiful books and very rustic and very simple, but also very subtle. And I think that's, you know, those are things that I aspire to as well. So
cool. Yeah, I'm excited to use this book because my CSA just started. And, you know, at first when I opened this, I was like, oh no, I'm not even close. I'm on the other side of the country. But you know, when it's exploring the regional foods. But so much of it is so just universal. I can't wait to use it. And we're actually a community-supported radio station here, so I'm very happy to be contributing this book to our little bookshelf here at Heritage.
Excellent.
So one last question, because that's about all the time we have, but what delicious food are you making right now in your backyard or later on?
Oh, you know, well, my garden at home is pretty. We've focused on flowers this year, and last year we sort of let it go because we were working on the book so much. Uh-huh. But at Lark, we have a little herb garden, and we have some berries growing back there. So I was just picking. I have these really great white alpine strawberries. I have several pots of them.
Oh, you have those?
So,
those are amazing. I was just talking to friends. I once planted them a summer, and they were amazing.
Anyway. Yeah, I've loved alpine strawberries for years, and I usually have them at various the couple of homes I've had over the last 10, 12 years. And so I had this one little plant that I kept alive, and I finally got it to grow. So now I've got it in three pots at the restaurant. And so I've been picking those. Right now it's rhubarb and strawberry seasons here still. And you know, you probably noticed in the book that I divide the seasons into three, you know.
Yeah.
Evergreen, which is our long and slow spring, and then Bounty when there's just too much, too fast, but it's all amazing. And then we go into our long, cool, misty winter. But the strawberries are just great right now, and the rhubarb. So I'm using those little white strawberries on our cheesecake. So loving it.
Thank you so much for keeping those little alpine strawberries going, because I was starting to worry I wasn't seeing them enough.
We need to get more out there.
Yes, we do. And we need to get more of your books out there because they're awesome. Everybody check out also Lark Recipes on iTunes. That's where, or Lark Cookbook.
Right, Lark Cookbook in the iTunes store. And that's an app with, you know, like lots of good functionality, lots of slideshows for every recipe, step-by-step instructions. You know, you can email yourself a shopping list. So really functional. We're really close to having an iBook version, which will be more like the book, but it'll have videos kind of embedded in there, just a great way to enjoy the media. And then we're also in the Kindle store as an ebook. So hard to keep track of all these formats, but you know, we're trying to be there for just any way that people would like to enjoy it and get a sense of what it's like here.
Excellent. So cool. Thank you so much for your time, John.
Well, pleasure to talk to you, Kathy.
And have a great night. We'll see you next week on
you
Eat
too.
Your Words.
We'll see you in Brooklyn. I was there a couple weeks ago.
Oh, wonderful. Well, welcome in a week.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
Signing off. See you next week on Let's Eat In.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.